Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Musician's Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Mark, and today I have the distinct pleasure of speaking with my buddy, Brendan Buckley. Brendan is a percussionist, drummer, producer based out of Los Angeles. He's currently on the road with Morrissey, but has also performed and played with numerous other acts over the years, including Shakira, Tegan and Sarah, Damien Rice, JJ Lin. His credits are unbelievable. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Brendan a few times over the years, and he's always just really kind and knowledgeable. He's just got a great energy. So you're bound to get a lot from this. I know I did. As usual, if you're getting something from these episodes, please do me a favor, leave us a rating or review on your preferred streaming platform. And also make sure you check out Brendan at brendanbuckley.com. Before we start this interview off, I just want to apologize for the audio quality at the start. I had a slight issue when we first began this interview, but it does progressively get better during the course of the interview. That's it for now. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Brendan Buckley. All right, Brendan, it's Travis. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. I'm super excited to talk to you again. I know that we've spoken a couple times over the years. You're always very gracious with your time. I thank you for that. This podcast is a little different to some of the previous ones we've done. And it's always a little strange to ask my guests to do this. But what I like to do, just so the listeners know where you're kind of coming from or possibly what sort of mental state you might be in during the course of this interview, is I ask you to introduce yourself, please. So tell the world who Brendan Buckley is.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. And let's see. I am a drummer. I'm a professional musician. I grew up in New Jersey in the United States. I went to college at a music conservatory in Miami. I live in Los Angeles and work out of that city. I play the drums and I freelance, which means I provide drumming services where I either play on people's albums or I go on tour with them or I play concerts or do TV show performances, things like that. And I've been lucky enough over the years to have worked with many, many super talented, very popular artists. So people tend to know me from different places. So a lot of people know me because of the 20 plus years I've worked with Shakira, being her drummer. But I'm currently on tour with the singer Morrissey, and we're doing a South American tour right now. I'm speaking to you from Mexico City. And I've had a pleasure working with a ton of other amazing artists like Tegan and Sarah, Damien Rice, Perry Farrell, you know, things like that. I've had bands with a lot of buddies. I was in a band called Pedestrian. I was a band called Fulano. I produce music also, and I write music, and I can hack away at a lot of different instruments. I have a recording studio, so I get to record drums for people and then just do it virtually and email them the drum parts, and they can put them on their records. And that's been a fun project also. That's what I do.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And interestingly enough, something I was going to ask you at a later point in the interview is, I mean, I know you grew up in New Jersey. From our previous conversations, I know you studied at, I think it was somewhere in Miami, University of Miami, perhaps. And you just said you're based in Los Angeles and you've got your studio and you're doing the production thing. I know you do the videos where you trade kind of drum licks with other drummers and stuff. Those are always super cool. So let me ask you an interesting question, which might seem like a bit of a sort of ignorant question given how technology has gone. But how important do you think being based in a musical city like a Los Angeles or a Nashville or an Austin, Miami, these kinds of places, how important do you think that is nowadays with how easy it is to kind of file share and just be so prominent on the internet?
It's a good question. I still think it's extremely important, but not necessary. I think that if you have your musical contacts, your buddies with whom you work, and you work and you trust each other, you like each other, you appreciate each other's musicality, you could probably move to Alaska or Sri Lanka or whatever, and you can still work with those people, either by, you know, sending files back and forth or flying together when you do have shows or rehearsals. There's a lot of bands with whom I play that we all live in different countries, and we just meet each other at the rehearsals. That we pick a rehearsal spot, like, for instance, this week we're in Mexico City, and the band and crew is from all over the globe. So we all meet here, and then we play some concerts, and then we all go back home to where we live. But that being said, that's because I already have the musical connections, the network. If you live someplace where no one knows you yet, it's kind of a little more difficult to sustain a career. So I know a lot of people that used to live in LA who were very busy, very prominent musicians in LA, and decided at a certain age to say, you know what, I'm selling my house and moving to Nebraska or something. And they still work a lot because they put in the time making musical relationships with various people, and that sustains.
Cool.
So I think it's not necessary. There are talented people all over the place. Every city I go to, I somehow bump into some drummer who's a totally killing drummer in some bar or studio or something. So that's not exclusive to major music cities. But the networking, the pool of musicians that you meet, it's bigger in a city like London, New York, Nashville, Los Angeles, places like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes total sense. Now, before we hit record, I told you that we probably won't go down just a drumming rabbit hole like our previous interviews. But this one, I feel like I've asked you about it before. I'm going to ask you again, just because I always found Tommy in particular quite fascinating. You studied for a little while with both Sonny and Tommy Ego, correct?
Mm-hmm. Ego, yes.
Tell me, if you wouldn't, and I mean, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. What was that experience like? Because, you know, he has quite the reputation of basically not putting up with bullshit. You know, which I've always liked. I like that approach. You know, it's how I'm wired. But, you know, what was that like for you as a young musician in that environment? Was that intimidating? Do you feel like it really helped sort of cement certain principles with you? Just, you know, talk about it if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, sure. So my experience of studying drums with Tommy Igo was fantastic. Because I met him when I was 15 years old. I was, I didn't know a lot. I had a lot of curiosity, and I was very eager to get better at the drums very quickly. And he sensed that. And so he pushed me really hard. I have a feeling if he pushed another person as hard as he pushed me, they might have quit drums. But because I was really into it, and like anything he threw at me, I'm like, thank you. I'll go work on this. I'll be back in a week. And I think he saw that in me. So he felt like he could be real, I don't want to say tough, but, you know, he pushed me really hard.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I liked it. I like a little bit of tough love. I like when someone challenges me to do better than I can already do. Like, I think he could do even better than that. I like that.
Yeah.
So being 15, that was perfect for me, because he basically opened up a whole world for me that I didn't know about. You know, just all these styles of music and ways to play the drums and percussion and everything classical, like orchestral music. He taught me everything. And what was also good was he took the role of being a mentor seriously also. For instance, he would say, you know, you're only 16, but I have a gig on Friday in Manhattan. Do you want to come to it? And I'm like, yeah, okay. He goes, you're not allowed in, but I'll sneak you in the club. I'm like, okay, great. So I would take a train into New York City from New Jersey, and he'd sneak me in. I'd watch him play two sets of music, and I was really young. But then I got to see what it was like to gig and all that stuff, not just watch MTV and see Van Halen and say, that's cool. But I saw what it was like to just to teach, to record, to do local gigs. And it was just great. And then whenever he would go on tour for a jazz fest in Europe or Japan, he would say, I don't want you to take the month off. So I want you to go over to my dad's house and study with him for the month. So that's why I would study with Sonny, his dad.
Wow.
It wasn't like a 50-50 thing. It was only when he went on tour, he said, you know, you don't get a break when I'm out. You just get to study with my dad instead. So that was fantastic because we worked on a lot of reading. We worked on a lot of big band swing stuff. And he was also a fantastic teacher. And and then when I turned, so I studied with Tommy from the ages of 15 to 18, and I definitely would not have had the bug or the ability to go to music school if I hadn't met him first.
Wow. That's awesome, man. I mean, you've had some monster gigs. I mean, we briefly touched base on it when you were introducing yourself. I'll do a big post introduction before this interview goes out to, I mean, you named some of the big ones already, Morrissey, Shakira, Perry Farrell. I mean, just lists and lists and lists, Miley Cyrus, Damien Rice. I mean, it's crazy. So I want to kind of dissect this a little bit for our listeners. And I basically want to ask you two things. Maybe you can shed some light here. The first thing is, what is the best approach on trying to get into that higher caliber of work if you are, say, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a drummer or not. A musicians work in a club circuit somewhere, and they decide they want to start trying to get that kind of work. What would your approach be with the knowledge you have now? What would you tell them?
It's another great question. Let me think. Because I believe in let me take a step back. I never thought exactly that this is what I would be doing. It's not like this was the exact career model that I was chasing. I just loved the drums, and I just wanted to keep playing the drums whenever possible. And I didn't care in what form I was playing the drums, what style of music, what level, what city. It didn't really matter to me as much as long as I could keep the access to playing the drums. That was my goal. So I did it when I was in high school in New Jersey. I did it in college when I was in Miami. And I was very open to opportunities. I would play with every musician I met. I'm like, let's jam, let's record, let's do a gig together, let's write something together, let's book a show together. I was just very into making music with other people. And I could say that a combination of that attitude and just practicing all the time, trying to shore up all my weaknesses, you know, if I thought my time was off, or I thought I couldn't play this tempo correctly, or this style of music, or something, I would work on it, because I wanted to have sort of very solid style and solid game that would apply to many different musical situations. So then when the opportunities came, someone wants to do a Venezuelan jazz trio gig, I'm like, let's do it. I can do that. Someone wants to do a reggae gig, I'm like, cool, let's do that too. And classical, you know, can you play timpani Friday night in this orchestra? I'm like, yeah, totally. So I just practiced and looked for as many opportunities as I could. And those were the building blocks for my progress through the music industry. I don't know if I could recommend that exactly to another person. That's what I did.
Yeah.
And it worked for me. And that's what I like to recommend for other people, is just practice, and then look for as many opportunities to meet, befriend, jam, perform, record, gig, whatever, with as many people as possible. And then you just let it do the work. The more you work and the more you practice, the better you get, the more people you know. And then opportunities open up that are larger. Hey, this artist is looking for someone to do a 2-week tour with him, or this drummer has a conflict. Could you cover for him? Or this guy doesn't have a passport to get out of the country. Do you have a passport? Could you go do that gig? Or this drummer is having tendonitis in his elbow. Can you cover for him? And those little opportunities, if you're ready for them, they impress people enough where they think of you for the next job and for the next job and for the next job. So that's kind of all I did. I never really aimed for a specific gig or a specific style of drumming. I just wanted to be involved.
That's cool. And it sounds very much like the whole, I remember reading an interview with Eric Singer many, many, many years back. And he had said something like, you know, when that phone does ring, you want to make sure you're prepared, because nothing would be worse than not being prepared and you finally get the opportunity and you just can't make it work. And it sounds like you were just so determined to be prepared. It's super admirable, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you have to be, I think in your teens and your 20s, that is the goal, is just to be prepared, practicing, growing, just getting as versatile and talented and getting your 10,000 hours together. And then once you become in your 30s, that's when you start to really say, okay, I'm kind of tired of being a jack of all trades and I really want to be me. I really want to hone down on my own identity, and I want to be hired for being me. And it's a nice transition, but yeah, I think you have to put the time in first, just absorbing and practicing.
Yeah.
And then you can start to transform that into and mold that into what you consider your musical identity.
Yeah, that's great. It's really nice, really insightful stuff. I mean, networking obviously plays a part as well. And some people, you know, I've noticed the change over the years with how into our phones we are now as a society. And mm-hmm. I'm stereotyping. I find that some people don't necessarily socialize in ways that people were socializing 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So, mm-hmm. you know, networking is an interesting one, because to some people that might just be like Facebook friending somebody. But mm-hmm. I'm talking more from an in-person, real-life networking point of view. You obviously come from a time where that was a thing, and, you know, you saying yes to all of these gigs, that's obviously a thing too. But what advice, if any, would you offer to listeners on how to potentially network nowadays?
Well, yeah. So I would say, yeah, I am from a different generation. So I think that networking was meeting people and becoming friends with them, meeting people, sharing common interests, saying, oh, you like this? I like that too. Or let's go do this together, or let's get to know each other better. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from there too. Things like that. That's networking. And then you start to really like other people's company. Like, man, I really like that bassist. I would love to do a gig with him someday, or I'd love to do a tour with him. I'm going to remember him. If there's ever an opening, he's going to be my first choice because I really enjoyed his company. That was networking for me a long time ago, was meeting people, you know, befriending them, and then hoping that at some point there would be a musical opportunity for the both of you to hang out, to do a record together, or to share a tour bus together. And so many of my best friends, that's exactly what we did. It came through one meeting or one gig, and we really hit it off, and now we're, you know, super tight. I do have a bunch of friends that I only know through Instagram or Facebook or something like that. And they're very nice. Sometimes we send jokes back and forth, but I really don't know them, I have to admit, because I've never really spent time with them. Yeah. So I don't know I'm not sure if I'd actually recommend them for a gig, because I don't know what they're like as a person. I just know that they're very friendly and they're funny or something. And that's about it. That's about as far as you can go through social media usually. But really knowing how someone is 24 hours a day, on when they're up, when they're down, how they handle problems, how they handle hurdles, difficulties. That's something when you're trying to assemble a band for a tour or a recording, those are things you need to consider. And how well they play. You can't really tell how well someone plays through your phone. You can guess. You're like, wow, the guy sounds like he knows what he's doing, but you're not sure. And I've had many instances where some manager or producer or artist decides they're going to hire someone just by a flashy video. And by day two of rehearsals, they're like, this is not working out.
Wow.
You know, they were very impressed by the flashiness of the video. But once you get in a room together, it's just not clicking the same way. Hmm. So, and that's an unfortunate experience because that person did nothing wrong, but they just don't have, they sound really good by themselves in a practice room, but they don't have the hours, the 10,000 hours of experience rehearsing with other people and grooving and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that maybe that will change over time, but those are the experiences I've had. And I don't want to sound like a grandpa, get off my lawn kind of thing. So I'm fully willing to embrace technology and new trends and everything. But what I have seen is still to this day, most of the gigs I get are through personal relationships. And most of the people that I hire are also through personal relationships.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. In fact, the thing that you were talking about, like where the person comes in and by day two, it's not working out. It's quite interesting. I've seen that firsthand myself, and it's kind of mind blowing as well, because like, I remember that particular situation with me, this guy who I'm not going to mention, because people might know his name, but I mean, just ungodly, like, I was floored by the videos, and unfortunately just couldn't, I don't even want to use the word chemistry, but couldn't sit with other musicians, you know, in like a pocket kind of situation. And that I thought was just like, it kind of blew my mind, but hey, it happens, I suppose.
When it comes to being a musician, there are so many things that you could be working on.
Yeah.
You could be working on your speed. You can be working on your dynamics. You could be working on your inventiveness. You could be working on all sorts of things. It's not wrong to work on that stuff. You can be working on your solo playing. You can be working on your odd time playing. But there are other subtler things that you work on, and you only notice those from repetition and gigs and working with other people. Things like groove, pocket, consistency, being a leader, having a good vibe, having great dynamics within a group, like not being the loudest guy in the room or the quietest guy in the room on the drums, you know, right in the middle so everyone feels comfortable. These are all things that you wonder why certain guys get a ton of gigs. And I'm like, I think those are the things that they do really well.
Yeah.
They just fit in to every musical environment so well. They slide in so perfectly that everyone around the room says, wow, great choice. This guy is fantastic. And I always aspired. I always wanted to be one of those people. I never wanted to be the fastest guy, the most impressive guy. I wanted to be the guy in the room where everyone looks around, smiles and says, this is really working. Wow, this is great. And it's very subtle. And it's hard to teach. It almost comes just through hours of repetition and trial and error, seeing what works, what doesn't work. And that's stuff I've always tried to convey to students, not students who are, you know, they're 14 and learning how to play a paradiddle, but guys who come to me in LA who they're already gigging and they want to know how to do better on auditions or how to do better on this tour. And I'm like, I try to teach them these very subtle things that make them very useful, very comfortable, very necessary.
Yeah, like people skills kind of situations.
People skills.
I mean, you sound, and I don't mean this in a like a weird way or anything like that. You know, the few times we've spoken and stuff, you always seem very level-headed to me. You know, it comes through. I'm always I don't mean this in any kind of weird context. I've always been attracted to those kinds of personalities. You know, just someone who seems to, like you say, be in a situation where you're easy to talk to. You're easy to get along with. I'm sure I don't see you day to day, obviously. Everyone's got their things, everybody, you know. But I think it's probably an attest to why you do so well. And I'm not trying to take away from your skill. You're extremely skilled as a musician, obviously. But whatever you've got going on there is great, man. So if you're trying to teach that to people, it's amazing. I know you're a big reader. You know, I see sometimes you put up these books and stuff on your posts and stuff. Let's switch gears for a second. We'll come back to the music thing in just 1 second. But have you got any kind of books, mindset books, or just other that you would recommend musicians read that might help mindsets?
Oh, that's a good question, too. I have so many, and unless I'm staring at them, I always forget. But I can try to remember a few. I read everything, so I read everything from psychology books to science books to autobiographies to mystery novels and detective novels. And so, but let me think. There were a couple very impactful books that I read early on. One of them was called The Inner Game of Tennis. I think the author's name is Galway. And it's a book. I don't know if you've heard of this book before, but no. It's a very short book. And it's this tennis coach. It's true. He's a tennis coach. And he's talking about how all of his students have fantastic mechanics. They're already playing tennis well, but they're not performing at a high level. So as a tennis coach, he tried to figure out what was going on. And then he figured out it was an entire mental problem they were having, where they were talking to themselves, negative speak while they're playing a match, letting their ego get in the way, nervousness, focusing on what other people think of them as opposed to just focusing on the ball and the racket and the stroke. And this applied so much to me when I was 21 and I was learning how to play the drums, but playing the drums around much older musicians who were much more experienced than me was very nerve-wracking, because I was thinking maybe they don't like me, maybe they prefer someone else, but that guy wasn't available, so they had to settle for me, or whatever these thoughts that go through your mind. And it's very difficult to play at a high level if while you're playing the drums you're thinking those thoughts. It's just getting in the way.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is to calm your mind and just focus on, you know, almost put yourself on autopilot and just let your body do what it does. And then critique yourself after the experience. Go home tomorrow, listen to a recording, watch a video and say, oh, I could improve that, or my left hand is doing this, or, but not during the action. It's self-sabotage if you are critiquing yourself while you're trying to perform.
That's
so
awesome.
I got into a habit of just always recording myself and never thinking while I'm playing the drums, just playing the drums. Just erase the mind, rehearse, perform, and that's it. And then destroying myself the next day through, you know, just critique. And there's another book I can think of that was very heavy for me, was Effortless Mastery by Kenny Werner. He's a jazz pianist.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite a similar book. It's about just... he's very into meditation, and he talks about just, you know, not being so hard on yourself and imagining that you are on the road toward mastery. You're on the trajectory to be a master at your craft. So just each day you're getting slightly better at becoming a master. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't be so hard on the one note you played that was wrong, or, you sped up or you slowed down, or you got lost in an arrangement of a song. Don't worry about it. You're walking towards mastery little by little. And it's an encouraging book. Those two were very good for me when I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
But I've searched for books like that my whole life. And I have, I don't know, hundreds of books in my living room all on the shelf. So I'd have to be there walking up and down, scanning the titles to remember all of them. But, I do like a lot of books about positivity, organization, empathy, encouragement, things like that. Life can be really hard. You know, there's a lot of setbacks thrown your way, and you need to accept that and get over them if you want to have, you know, a successful life.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy road. It's an up and down, up and down, up and down road. And you have to You have to have coping mechanisms to get through the hard times. And your coping mechanisms are supposed to change as you get older. What you did to handle your depression when you were 17 does not work when you're 31.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a new version of that, a more adult version of that. If you have a child or if you're married or if your parents are ill or something, you have to have a more mature way of coping with those stresses and challenges than you did when you were 13 or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm always looking for ways to handle what life throws at me.
That's awesome. Is that one of the reasons? I mean, I know you're quite the advocate for martial arts. You always seem to train wherever you are, which again is quite a disciplined thing. I mean, martial arts itself is quite a self-disciplined kind of thing. But the fact that you're on the road and managing to find dojos and stuff to train at, that's quite cool. Is that one of your kind of coping mechanisms, or do you do that just to kind of? Or, I mean, I suppose it's double-barreled. You could be doing that to look after your body as well because drumming's so physical.
Yeah, it is. What I have found, it is quadruple-barreled. I took a class this morning, a 2-hour class this morning, and it was fantastic. And so what I have found, I initially started martial arts just because I thought, hey, I don't know how to defend myself. Maybe I should learn this just a little bit, just a little bit. I started taking classes and I fell in love with it. And the things I fell in love with are, one, it's very difficult. It's very challenging and it's very humbling to be, 35 years old and be, you don't know anything and you're getting your butt kicked. And then to come back every day and learn a little more, that's incredible. And it's actually good to accept that you suck at things and to want to get better at them. You know, you get to a certain age where you're like, I just want to do things that I'm good at. That's not good. You should find things that are difficult and challenging. It makes you grow. So I found that I liked that. I liked the how challenging it was, but it's also good physically. You know, it helps keep me straight. On the road and I don't go out late at night. I don't drink. Because I book these classes at 6 or 7 in the morning, I have to be there. They're really hard.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think, well, I can go out and party tonight or I can get a good night's sleep and eat a healthy breakfast and go to class. So it almost saves me from the temptations of the music world.
Yeah.
And it really inspires me to be around these other people that are all from all walks of life in class, and they're all dedicating themselves to improving their art. It's a mind game, learning all the techniques and the counters, and it's physical chess, so that's also fun. There's so many things about it I didn't know when I was starting how much it was going to give me. And it gives me so much now that it's the hardest thing I do in the day. So it makes a thing like sound check or going through passport control or playing a concert, those seem like child's play.
Yeah.
compared to trying to escape chokes and things for 2 hours.
First thing in the morning, getting choked out. How have you found, or have you found that the self-discipline side of the martial arts, has that affected how you approach any of your musical practice?
It's almost the opposite. I already had that discipline with my music, and I that's maybe what made me gravitate toward martial arts so much, because I saw so many parallels.
Yeah.
There's so many parallels between what we do in a jiu-jitsu class and what we do either at a sound check or a dress rehearsal. It's the same stuff. You know, you're training, you're practicing, you're thinking, then you're letting go also, and just letting your accepting that this is as much as you know today, and then fixing your problems, coming back tomorrow a little better than you were yesterday. It's almost identical, minus all the bruises and everything. But if everything else is, it's almost identical. So I think it was almost the opposite. I already had that from high school and college, the discipline it took to practice and incrementally improve with music. And then when I started doing martial arts, I said, oh, it's kind of similar. It's not easy. You have to practice all the time and you get better almost at a glacier pace. It's not overnight. It's like, wow, sometimes I feel like I'm not getting any better at all, but you are. It's just imperceptible sometimes because it's slow.
Yeah. Slow burner. So let's go back to, sort of more music, related stuff. Let's talk about touring for a second, or more specifically, if you're up for it, I'd like to talk about family life while you're on tour. I know you've got a young family. Tell us, if you think you can, what your tips would be, or what maybe advice you would offer on how to try and stay connected with your loved ones when you're away for such extended periods of time.
Yeah, it's obviously it must be different for everyone. So I can only tell you what I know.
Yeah.
But what I know is that I love spending time with my family. I have a wife and a son. My son just turned 11, and being with them is my favorite thing in the universe. So it's not that I hate music or hate anything else. It's just I find myself, the time I spend with them is my favorite time. So I try to express that to them, that I'm not itching to get away. I'm not itching to go across the planet and get away from my family. It's actually, I mean, FaceTime is a beautiful invention. Yeah. I FaceTime with them all the time, I'm very up to date with what's going on at home as far as school activities, domestic life, everything. I want to know everything because I want to be in touch, and I also want to be available for them. They can call me 24/7 with the smallest problem, and I'll try to fix it. And then other things, like we try to plan trips to see each other all the time. Either I try to find ways to get home every 2 weeks, or I try to fly them out to visit me every 2 weeks. So long stretches of time and distance don't occur. And another thing is to plan for the future. Like if I have to go away for 6 weeks, we'll see each other midway in this city. And then when I get home, we'll do this, 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 and this. So it's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
I always try to have things to look forward to upon return. Whether it's a financial thing, like we can use this tour money, we can buy this, or we can go on this vacation, or, we can do these activities. We can see this movie together. We can go to this restaurant. We can, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think I'm always trying to make sure that they're in my calendar. It's not just I have work, I'm so busy, and then, oh yeah, there's this family that has to wait for me somewhere. And I try to make sure that they're a priority too, and they're in my daily calendar. You know, time we spend together, thoughts, plans, things like that. And I say all this and it's still difficult.
Of course.
it's still difficult. It's still a tug of war, up and down, push pull. Cause if you're together for so long, you know, people change, they want more, they want less, they're happy, they're not happy. So that's the ebb and flow of life and a relationship. And, you just do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, the inventor of FaceTime and stuff is absolutely incredible. Just, I really feel for the musicians who, well, not just musicians, anybody who worked in that kind of situation before things like Skype, Zoom, Facebook Messenger, just mobile phones in general, it must have been so tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it was. I remember it was a lot more fighting back then because it's just the distance creates a bit of antagonism somehow.
Yeah.
It's just like a very small underlying bit of bitterness just from distance and not seeing each other and not knowing what the other person's doing or what the other person's thinking. So you need to remain close even if you're far away from one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Brendan, what do you think has been the hardest part about being a musician for you?
For me, personally, the hardest part might be the inconsistency of it. You could probably tell by the way I talk and the way I think that I like organization. I like order. I like sort of predictability in certain ways. And you get none of that in the music industry. It is a day-to-day free-for-all chaos. And it goes against my nature, but I can't change it. So I have to accept it. And I'm pretty sure every high-level working musician would say the same thing, that just the unpredictability of it is quite challenging. And when I say unpredictability, I mean you don't know from gig to gig how much you're going to work, if it's going to happen, if it's going to get canceled, if you're going to get paid, how much you're going to get paid, when you're going to get paid, how long it's going to be, how short it's going to be. The whole thing is, if someone's just like a carefree gypsy, it's perfect for them. But for someone who likes order, it's very challenging.
Yeah.
And I have to really like take several deep breaths before writing emails because I'm getting all worked up about something. But that for me is difficult. And along with that, just the lack of ability for me to plan anything in my life, because I'm kind of at the will of all of my employers. They kind of tell me how much they want to work, how much they need me, when they need me, where. And I've missed so many weddings and anniversaries and family gatherings, and I've missed so many things because I can't plan.
Yeah.
Because I'm basically I'm a gun for hire.
Yeah.
So and no one gives you 18 months of calendar dates. They dole it out month by month.
Yeah.
So this is what your September is going to look like. This is what your October is going to look like. And it's something that's very challenging.
Of course.
So,
possibly an ignorant question. I was at a concert with a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about the musicians. The musicians were back in Yngwie Malmsteen, and some of them were back in Glenn Hughes. And we were just talking about the musicians in the band. And my friend made a comment about, the specifics don't matter, but he made a comment along the lines of, oh yeah, but all of those guys have managers who are protecting their interests and stuff like that. And that was an interesting comment to me, because while I know guys who do, who are sidemen or hired guns, who do have managers or personal managers, PR people, et cetera, et cetera, I also know many that don't. What is your approach to this? Do you have somebody who organizes your diary, et cetera, for you? Or do you do that yourself?
I would say that, although your friend said that, I would say that he's not entirely correct. I would say out of my experience, 95% of the musicians I know don't have a manager. I think that most of them, the ones that do what I do, the freelance artists, yeah, they're doing it on their own. And everything is done through networking and word of mouth. And there are managers on the projects. Like there will be tour managers and accountants and production managers. And they help you get paid and organized and everything. But I don't have a personal one. The very few times I've had a personal one, it was kind of a redundancy I didn't need. Because I'm already pretty savvy with my calendar and with my invoicing and everything. So, I don't know many musicians that actually have personal management now. I mean, actors do maybe, and maybe some producers do, but I don't know many freelance musicians that do.
Yeah, and plus you're giving a percentage of your check away. So if you can do it yourself, do it yourself, I suppose.
I mean, if I had a manager that just made my life so much easier, they got me all these great gigs, and they got me paid like ridiculous rates, they would be worth that percentage.
Yeah.
But it kind of doesn't happen that way. There are certain wages that are, they're just fixed. And there are certain, you can negotiate all you want, but there's certain things that they're only done a certain way. And so if you have a guy who's hardballing, like a sports manager who's trying to get you the best contracts possible and stuff, you might not get the gig.
Yeah.
I mean, I have an attorney. I have an accountant. I have an investor. I have those things, but that's just for my own,
yeah,
my own life. They don't get me work. The work I get is through my friends, basically.
Yeah, and all my the friend, networking friends, you did yeah. over the years, you know.
All the gigs I get are through my friends.
That's crazy.
My other musician friends, yeah.
Brendan, I want to respect your time, so I have one last question for you. And again, possibly seems a little redundant because you've given such good advice during the course of this interview. But I'm going to ask it anyway because I like to close the interviews with this. And by all means, you know, spin it, twist it, do whatever you like to it so that it applies somehow. But what do you think the best piece of advice you've ever received in regards to your music career has ever been?
Wow.
Yeah, it's loaded. So that's why I say if you want to twist it, you know, it doesn't even have to be that somebody gave you the advice. It could have been something you learned along the way. It can be whatever you think. You know, the way I like to look at it is, you know, if I could have told myself at 16 this, maybe I would have saved myself a few years. I like to look at it like that, but that's just me personally. You can look at it however you like.
Well, I have a page in my iPhone where all I do is jot down quotes and inspirational quotes and things like that. So if I sat down, I have hundreds. So if I sat down and just started spitting out all these different things, it would take all day. But let me just think of, I won't give you the best, but let me just think of the first one that popped into my mind.
Okay.
A tour manager once said to me when I was very young and on tour and I was, you know, getting huffy puffy about something that wasn't going right on tour. And he said, "Hey man, don't worry, I'll take care of it. It's just not right now." I'm like, "Yeah, but this and that." He goes, "Just, you know what? Don't worry, I'll take care of it. Just give me 24 hours or 48 hours. And I'm like, and he goes, "You know what? You have to learn to pick and choose your battles. Hmm. You know, there's no reason to complain about every single thing all day long that's not going well, because there's just too many. In the music industry, there's just too many. It's every day. All throughout the day, things aren't going as planned, and you're just adjusting. You're just adjusting, adjusting, adjusting. There are certain times where you can't be a pushover, and you have to say, "Listen, we need to address this. This can no longer happen, or we need to have a better system for this problem." Those are your battles.
Yeah.
But the other ones, you just learn to say, "Hey, man, it's cool. I trust you. We'll fix it tomorrow. We'll fix it sometime down the road." And that attitude really helped me chill out a lot. Just, you know what? You got to learn to pick and choose your battles, man. That's a cliche. I know it is, but it really hit me hard that, you know, maybe I'm making a big deal out of small things. Maybe I need to reserve those for the actual real make or break things and not all these little things. So that one helped me a lot. Again, that goes back to like all that earlier stuff we're talking about, just coping. You're learning to cope. And I would say one more thing, if you have time, is something that no one told me this, but I figured this out over time, is that one of the best qualities you can have in music, in life, friendship, any job out there, is to be a problem solver. Not to be a drummer, to be a problem solver. So what has given me a lot of positive success is the fact that I look at every day as, what can I do to help the people around me, to help the guitarist, to help the MD, to help the piano player, my drum tech, my manager, I mean, the tour manager, the artist, what can I help them? What problems can I solve for them besides just playing the drums? You know, everything is a problem that needs to be solved. You know, you're hired. I'm hired because someone needs a drummer to play these beats for these songs for this concert. It's a position that needs to be filled. I will first help you by doing that. But what else can I do? I will have an updated passport. I will have a visa taken care of. I will be able to get to that city without getting lost or arrested or whatever, and I'll be on time. My gear will sound great. I will know all the songs by the time I get there. That won't be a problem. I will be flexible with my hours. I will be willing to do this. I will stay at this hotel. I can, you know, everything is, how can I make other people's jobs easier?
Yeah.
And by doing that, you become incredibly valuable. And I don't want to say irreplaceable, because no one in the world is irreplaceable, but you become harder to replace. So because they start to say, wow, having this guy in our group or in our organization or something is, it gives us so much more than just the average Joe. So you can do the least amount of work possible to do your job, or you can sit there and say, how can I be very helpful with solving other people's problems throughout the day? And that doesn't mean being a pushover. That doesn't mean like walking around just kissing ass all day long saying, you know, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? It's just realizing that someone needs some encouragement. Someone needs some lifting. Someone needs help. Someone needs some motivation. Someone needs an opinion. Like what color should we wear tomorrow? How about black? Great, black. It's like, whatever. It doesn't matter. But just having an opinion and being willing to help is so valuable, I think, throughout life. And you see the people who seem to do well in families, in parties, in businesses. They're the people who are, I don't want to say they're alphas, but they're just people who are confident and willing to step up and say, hey, I got an idea, or is there anything I could do to help you? Or, you know, I'll take care of that. And I think that's really helpful. And I think that's important to realize.
Yeah, it's super helpful. And it's really cool to kind of hear as well, because, you know, it's almost like you become the light, you know. I know that, again, possibly sounds cliche, but if you can just help brighten someone's day or help their load a little, man, everybody wants to be around those people. Everybody. You mm-hmm. show me one person who says they don't, I'll show you a liar, man, because like, while the human race is, you know, by default, a slightly negative driven species, we want the positivity. You know, people love being around positive people. So I think it's great advice.
Yeah, and if you do what I do, I play the drums. I have 100 friends that all play the drums, and they're all amazing. Like my buddies, my best friends are all drummers. They're all amazing. We all do a good job. So it's to say that you're irreplaceable is not true.
Yeah.
I could get food poisoned tomorrow and they'll fly another guy in and he'll slay the gig. So, you know, you can't be completely irreplaceable. What you can do is you can be valuable.
Yeah.
You know, you could be someone that I really prefer having this guy here for X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And those are the things you need to focus on. And again, that goes back to those earlier intangibles that we were talking about that I've learned only over time is that, you know, there are so many people that can play drums well, that can play in time, that everything. So you have to think, what makes you more valuable?
Yeah.
And start honing in on those qualities also.
Brendan, that is so cool, man. I can't thank you enough. I'll put all your links and show notes and every bit of information I can find in our show notes so people can find you. This was super insightful, man, and it's always great to talk to you. So I just can't thank you enough, dude.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out once again. It's very nice of you to think of me. And I like talking about music and I like talking about life. And anyone that's listening, I hope this helped. And if there's anything I can do to further help you, feel free to reach out, you know, social media or my website or anything. And life can be hard sometimes. So, you know, let us all help each other.
Awesome. Thank you, my dude. Peace. All right. There we have it. Another episode done and dusted. As usual, thank you if you're still listening. Please leave us a rating or review. I would like to publicly thank Brendan for his time. Make sure you check out the Musician's Mentor podcast at musicians-mentor.com. You can find out more about me at travismark.com. Make sure you check out Brendan at brendanbuckley.com. Have a great Thanksgiving, and I will talk to you soon.
Peace.